Hello, I'm Razia Iqbal. Welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. It comes to you live from our studios in central London. We begin today with nothing less than the future of our planet. A sobering report from the UN Environment Programme says government commitments made so far to reduce greenhouse gas emissions will not be enough to restrict global warming to the limit agreed under the Paris Climate Accord. World leaders have squandered so much time taking action necessary to combat climate change that what's required now is rapid and unprecedented cuts in greenhouse gas emissions if we are to avert the intensifying consequences. The latest warning and reminder of this existential threat comes in the UNEP's annual emissions gap report. It says that in order to hold global warming to 1.5 Celsius above pre-industrial levels, emissions will have to be cut by 7.6% every year for the next 10 years, with developed countries needing to act immediately. It warns that with current strategies, global temperatures will rise by more than 3 degrees, causing more destructive heat waves, storms, and flooding. I've been finding out more from one of the report's authors, Anne Olhoff.
This is the 10th year that we're producing the emissions gap report, and what we can see over the 10-year period is simply that the emissions gap has gotten larger than it was back when we started doing the report. And although there are positive developments in many areas, including especially renewable energy, we are still not acting at a pace and speed and depth that we need to. So the emissions gap is larger. Countries need to step up action, they need to step up ambition, and they need to do it now.
So that's a pretty clear and pretty stark instruction. Give us some detail of where you looked and the specifics of these findings.
So first of all, we each year take a look at how are global emissions developing. And we can see that over the past decade, emissions have grown at about 1.5% annually. And to contrast that, what we find in the report is that if we want to be serious about the 1.5 degree goal and getting on track towards that, we actually need to decrease emissions at the global level by around 7.6% annually from 2020 to 2030, and by 2.7% to get on track to 2 degrees of global warming by the end of the century. We also look at both collective and individual G20 economies, and we focus on G20 economies because they are responsible for about 78% of global emissions at the moment. So we look into current policies in those countries, we look into the targets that they've set for climate action by 2030 and whether or not they're on track to that.
So the world's 20 richest countries need to take the biggest and the swiftest steps to, for example, move away from fossil fuels. In the context that you are speaking, the richest country of them all, the United States, has begun to pull out of that Paris Accord.
That's true, but on the positive side, at least, we still see at the state level in the USA that a lot of action is happening. We see on the non-state actors front that many are declaring that they're still in. So they're sort of counteracting the overall effect of the US pulling out of the Paris Agreement.
So within that G20 group, the United States, we've already mentioned, which are the countries then that are responsible for the greatest of those expansion, if you like, of their carbon footprint?
The six top emitters include China, USA, the EU, India, Russia, and Japan. And then we also have international transport. The key message is, of course, that all countries need to step up action and they need to step up the ambition.
When you say all countries need to, I'm just wondering, in specific terms, what is it that you are telling people that they need to do that they weren't already doing and clearly not fast enough and enough of?
We need to continue the positive developments in terms of uptake and investments in renewable energy technologies. We need to look at how to transition out of fossil fuel production, in particular coal, of course.
And does the report also identify the specific changes that we're likely to see in different parts of the world if what your recommendations are suggesting are not taken up?
We do not look into the impacts associated with different degrees of warming, but there are so many reports out there that have already given us a very vivid picture of the implications predictions a warming of more than 2 degrees. And last year, the International Panel on Climate Change clearly showed in their 1 degree special report that even just from 1.5 to 2 degrees will make a huge difference in terms of species extinction, in terms of making places around the world uninhabitable. Even at the lower end of the temperature increases, every single 0.1 degree matters. So I think that's a key message to bring along. We do not want to pass on a world to our children or grandchildren where we're looking at a 3.2 or higher degrees of global warming by the end of the century, and we need to bring that down as much as we possibly can.
In compiling these reports, you're obviously very clear in terms of collating the data and so on, but I wonder how you reflect on it personally, whether there is a kind of prevailing pessimism here.
I don't think you shouldn't be working in this field if the prevailing feeling is pessimism. I think there's so much that can be done, so much more that should be done. And on the positive side, as I already mentioned, some of the cost decreases in renewable energy sources have been amazing over the past 10 years, developments also in battery and storage. We basically know what we have to do, and we even have the technologies available to bring us on track towards 1.5 degrees, and then we should have time to develop the measures that are still needed further on into the future. It is rather bleak, the current situation, but it's also one that basically shows us a way. We have good options to show us a way forward.
Well, let's hear now in a little more detail some of what we've just heard from Anne Olhoff. I've been speaking to Laurence Tubiano. She is the French economist and diplomat. She was appointed French ambassador for international climate negotiations in connection with the 2015 COP21 climate change conference in Paris. She is now with the European Climate Foundation.
We know that already from not the last 5 years, that what was on the table first in Paris pre-agreement, all these plans that countries have put forward has to be multiplied by three in ambition if we wanted to decrease the limit. And of course, after the 1.5 report of IPCC, we knew that the plan has to be improved by fivefold. There is nothing new, but it's really good that before Madrid and of course before the crucial year of 2020, countries are reminding that they are not preparing their plans ambitious enough. And that, I think, a good moment to recall that at the same time where we see climate impacts now more and more violent and brutal for many countries. It's bleak. It's not new. But it's a good wake-up call to say, like, we really have to prepare better plans for next year.
It's interesting to hear you speak in the way that you are as somebody who was a key architect of that original Paris Agreement, because in these negotiations, there does seem to be a kind of cognitive dissonance between the world's biggest polluters being nowhere near where they should be and the thing that we see every day, the human toll of climate change, which is becoming impossible to ignore.
It's really impressive, this cognitive dissonance. In particular from the government side, you see things moving on the business side, on the local authority side. I think about the cities movement. You see a movement in the society itself in many countries, not only in Europe or in the US. And the reaction of the government is really, really slow. Again, the global emissions are rising and they don't seem to panic. They should be panicking. They should be really thinking very seriously on how they do better. There is a number of countries that has decided that they at least commit for carbon neutrality by 2050, which is really the implementation for a number of countries, the biggest one, what's consistent with Paris goal. But still, of course, they have to put the plan forward. It's not only good to make put numbers and targets, which are good, but one is really to implement them and to show to the real economy how to get there.
How is it then that someone like you and many people who work alongside you and are working in this area, policymakers and their attempts to try and persuade politicians, is it partly to do with only being interested in the next 5 years of an election coming up or not? Or what is it? Because this feels like something that requires, as you say, a certain amount of panicking into action.
Partly, and depends, of course, on the different political system people are living in. Certainly, this five-year cycle and the problem of the electorate. But it's not only, it's the conservative sectors against climate action have been quite active in some countries. Look at US, for example, the oil and gas companies who are really very efficient in first funding climate denialism, then now saying we can do with still more oil and gas in the system and they will find a solution. So there was a distraction made by a number of organized interests who were in a way arguing in favor of low climate action. And in particular, the fear that it will cost a lot when in reality, what is costing a lot is to do nothing. So that's in our democratic system, but where there are more centralized and more authoritarian systems, that's not a problem of the short term. But there are, of course, battles inside to say, look, we need accelerated growth, we need more coal, we need more steel. And it's really the discussion within China these days where a number of actors are pushing for a strong climate action, and in particular the scientific community. But there are others that say, look, the growth for climate, the economic growth for China is really important. And we know how to grow the economy through traditional ways, putting more coal power plants is really frightening, and putting even more capacity in steel and cement. The way is probably government that hasn't put enough time in their thinking on how to do this decarbonization agenda. And I think that there is a cognitive dissonance. They haven't worked seriously enough to gather all the actors, the business, the cities, the citizen, etc., just to design these plans. So they are living at, we know how to do the job normally, so it's business as usual.
Are you optimistic that there will come a point when collectively countries will undertake to make these emissions cuts?
I think, yes, the problem is it's a rush against time. I do think that the real economy trend is there. Renewable energy is there. Of course, the real economy is going in that direction. We see even companies promoting steel that is made out clean energy. But the problem is the time, if that's what UNEP report is really clear about. If we have started that effort 10 years ago, then the emission reduction per year in average should have been 3-something%. Now, because we lost so much time, I am mixed between, yes, it's going in the right direction, but we are so late.
That was Laurence Tubiana, one of the key architects of the Paris Accord Agreement, speaking to me from Switzerland. There is, needless to say, lots and lots on this story on our website, bbc.com/news.